And welcome back. Hour number two. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're along tonight, wherever you may be on this beleaguered planet of ours. We're going to spend an hour updating the Morgellons mystery with our two friends and colleagues of many years now, Cliff Mickelson, who has had Morgellons for going on 15 years, and Jan Smith, of course, who has made many appearances with Cliff and without Cliff on this program. She has had it for about the same length of time between them, three decades. Let's just round it off. There are things happening out there that are very strange. Probably the saddest thing, especially when you talk to heroic people like Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith, a citizen scientist supreme. Jan has done more research and more work than over more years than anyone else in the Morgellons field. Now, what I'm alluding to is the overall caliber of people who have ascended to positions of public notoriety in the Morgellons field. Some are clearly representing the vested interests of non-public agencies, shall we say? Don't want to say they're intel agents, so we'll say it that way. Others are simply representing their egos. Others are being pushed forward by actually scrambled mental processes. They have the ability to speak. They have the ability to convince people. The saddest aspect of all is that many, if not most of them, do have Morgellons. And it is a wide-ranging, unknown in terms of origin and exactly how it works, syndrome that devastates people on dozens of different fronts. It's quite a grim situation. We haven't done enough on it lately. We're going to do more. So let's see if Cliff Mickelson is standing by. Are you there, Cliff?
Yes, Jeff. How are you today?
I'm hot. I mean, literally.
Right here, you're in a little heat wave going.
103.
That's hot. Yeah.
Where you are, it's not quite so hot.
Well, actually, no. Surprisingly, it's not. It's pretty fresh down here, and surprisingly so, because the humidity is pretty high normally down here. But we've had very, very odd and unusual weather for this particular part of the
country. Are you near the Gulf at all?
No, I'm on the other side from the Gulf. The Gulf's about 600 miles to the east.
Okay, you're on the Pacific side of Mexico then.
Right.
All right, very good. Jan, are you there?
Yes, I am, Jeff.
Thanks for getting up early.
Oh, sure.
Jan is a night owl's night owl. She is she works all night. She's amazing. All right, I won't ask both of you how you feel because I could pretty well fill in the answer myself. But my remarks in the beginning about the overall field of Morgellons and the Morgellons community remind me of so many dogs chasing their tails, so many hustlers and hucksters preaching at people who just are desperate and have nowhere to turn, and they grab the first safe refuge that they see coming along. And unfortunately, many of those refuges are rip-off people. They're con artists. They're people who are delusional, and literally speaking, they are in some cases because of Morgellons. But they're not. Let me rephrase the last part. Delusional in the sense that anyone who tries to sell or convince you that there is a cure for this is dead wrong, at the very minimum. Cliff, how do you see the current status of the Morgellons community now?
Been in a holding pattern for some time, and unfortunately, I would like to be a little more positive about the outlook for a non-bumpy landing, but I don't think we're going to be putting this plane down for some time, Jeff.
Yeah. It's every time I turn around, another person is being promulgated as a great hope or someone who really needs exposure or needs to be able to tell the people about a therapeutic protocol that is supposed to be producing marvelous benefits and all that. But Morgellons may clear up on the skin, but no one can ascertain what it's doing inside the body. And as Jan and I and Cliff have talked about for years, the skin portion of it may well be It's simply a manifestation of the later stages of a rather rapid onset and total penetrating impact on the body with all of these different kinds of organisms, if they're not, well, that's not the right word. Machines, perhaps, is a better word. Jan, tell us your view on all of that.
Well, in talking to some other people with Morgellons and kind of doing a survey, we're finding that the people that really show up with the drastic symptoms of Morgellons seem to have some other genetic predispositions which causes that. And according to what Gwen Scott has said, and she's a lady that worked with Clifford, she's actually spoken to a man that helped design this disease. And from what he told her, all of the portions of this disease are supposed to be in a stealth mode so that if they're in your body, your immune system is not supposed to act against them. So for the people with Morgellons, there is something in their genetics that's causing it to act against it.
All right. So at this point in time, you're leaning strongly toward a human origin of Morgellons.
Yes and no.
Okay.
You know, I go two ways with this. I'm a full believer that there could be people here from other planets already. I mean, I know, you know, that doesn't add to the to the word that I have about Morgellons, but I mean, I'm taking all things into account, and I would not be surprised if there is some extraterrestrial help in an exchange of information between us and other places. I'd be stupid to believe that. I mean, knowing all the rest of the things I know, and by and large, what they've done to the community that believes in extraterrestrials, they've done to Morgellons. I mean, they've discredited us in exactly the same way. They've ridiculed us in exactly the same way, and it worked that hard at doing that if they don't have a problem.
And the people in the Morgellons group, the community, I call it that because it's a common label, are oftentimes in it for reasons that I tried to delineate earlier. There are some bad people around in every group that are just pushing their own agendas.
Yeah, if I could jump in there, I would say absolutely, Jeff. And furthermore, worse than that, you've got the profiteers and the hucksters, and there's always somebody ready to take advantage of someone else's grief and misery. And unfortunately, this community has more than its share of those kinds of people, and they need to be rooted out and exposed.
I agree. All right, Jan, what's the latest in your research? Is this, since your first early days of finding fibers and so forth, is this thing changing any?
Well, I mean, I think this last paper that I wrote that you have on your site takes us to a place where I think it's undeniably nothing from nature. I refer to the paper that you have on my site that I talk about the lady that has the hexagon skin, and she has the actual layer of hexagons in her leg. And one of the things, if your viewers would notice that article, if they want to see pictures, I'm a visual person. But basically, what we find in looking at that is there's two things involved in the picture. There's a green hexagon, and also in that same picture, there's a strand of clear material, but inside that clear material, there are hexagons, and they're tiny hexagons that
surround
the picture of the green hexagon. So we know that there's a technology involved there, which probably does start at the nano level for sure. And these things are within these fibers, and from there they grow inside these fibers and turn into these hexagons. And from what I've witnessed of the Morgellons fibers, they have the ability to lay themselves out in a grid in your body.
Interesting. Now, when people hear us talking about nano, they say, if they're sharp, well, they can't see nano. Well, of course we can't see nano in its incipient early stages, but we can see the ultimate manifestations of nanotechnology, and that's what Jan is talking about precisely. Her paper is in Featured Stories at Rents.com. Look for it. You'll find it. It's very interesting. Cliff, your view on, after all these years, on where and what this thing may be and where it might be coming from?
Yes. Well, of course, and I've said before on the show, Jeff, and I stay with that, is that all cards are on the table with this particular syndrome. This thing is so bizarre, so unusual, so out of the box that anything is really quite possible as to a source of its origin. And I strongly believe that it's It's technology that we don't possess on this particular at this particular point in time. It's black technology. It's not a natural, as Jan said. I agree with her. It's not a natural formed creation. It's artificial.
And, you know, we have to take a break here. But one of the sad parts of our species is, no matter what it is, by way of a tragic event that afflicts a lot of people, or in the case of the oil spill, a lot of people, the powers that be are always quick to exploit and parasitize it. And we don't mean anything to them. That's why nothing has come from the government in terms of a definitive answer or even viable information about this syndrome, Morgellons. Jan Smith and people like Cliff Mickelson and Clifford Carnicum, of course, have done the research that the government probably knows full well about, and they're just watching. Parts of the government, anyway. Back in just a minute. Okay, let's get right back to our conversation, our update on Morgellons with Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith. The issue of off-planet origins remains very much a possibility. We can't rule it out. We can't exclude it. Nanotechnology is nanotechnology. We don't own it in the universe, in the solar system, in the galaxy. We use it often enough, certainly. But the idea, and this goes way back years ago to our first programs, when we talked about this syndrome of perhaps how many fibers could be in the average body, Jan, of someone who is moderately afflicted? Hundreds of thousands? Millions? That's hard to know. We don't know, because there's never been an autopsy done yet on a Morgellons fatality to check all the major organs to see if they are infested with these particular fibers and other well-known Morgellons objects. Go ahead.
Well, I have a little something to say on that. A friend of mine was in Hawaii vacationing, and she spoke to a person that worked in Canada as a pathologist in a pathology lab, and most of the time they did the autopsies, and she alluded to this person that they had been finding all kinds of obstructive fiber balls inside people, which was the cause of death. And upon being asked, you know, what kind of a postmortem they write up for these people, she said they were told not to mention this in them, and they have to exclude anything like that.
Well, that's
I tried to contact this person,
yeah,
and she wouldn't speak to me.
Okay. Well, that's hearsay, unfortunately.
Right, it is. But I think that if somebody was coming across something like that, I think at this point there's unspoken word in the medical field is you don't talk about it.
Well, for sure. Dermatologists don't talk about it. They just do their thing and give you some ointment and send you home.
Right,
but I think it's time...
To be actually told to hide the cause of death is pretty big.
This happens all the time. I think it happens far more than most people will admit. I do think it's time for pathologists and people who perform autopsies, if they are coming up with these things, any autopsy, they need to make the data public. Even if it's sent to you anonymously with all references to location, sex, age, doesn't matter. Let's get some lead on the table here. Lead? Let's get some something on the table, something substantial.
We'll get some meat and potatoes on the table.
No, I'm a vegan. I didn't want to go there either. But seriously, whoever this person was has an obligation to follow up with these people in Canada to try to get them to agree quietly, to write up a paper in detail, with photographs even, and keep their names out of it, and let it be published. It's time. We have not been able to get any data like that down here. So if that story is true, and it may be, I don't know, I think there is, it's time. It's time. What I was trying to say earlier is that the idea that these organisms, doggone it, that's not right either, but it helps people understand, these fibers, these things that move, they move. We've seen them move. Jan's got video of them, actually, these fibers reaching out, moving. They move like an organism, but they're more like they're machines to me at this point. That's my view of it. Now, that said, we have the idea of a collective intelligence among them. When the body becomes infested with them, they certainly penetrate the brain and all the major organs. There's nothing going to keep them out. They're not stopped by the blood-brain barrier. Collective intelligence. Cliff, you may have been the first to bring that up here. It's almost like the body is cohabiting the same space with something else. I don't know how you phrased it back then, but it's been a number of years. How do you feel about that?
Yes, well, that's true, and it's not just what I've said in the past about that, but you know, I think you'll find that a large number of Morgellons sufferers will relate the same experience. It's a rather ethereal experience. It's rather unnerving, actually. But there does seem to be, or you sense, the feeling that there is some kind of communication going on with this particular form, whatever it may be. It does things that are unusual, that are not normal. When you attack it, it responds in kind. It does. There's just a host of things that it does that would seem to indicate that it has capabilities to react above and beyond just blind reaction.
What's particularly eerie for me is that it seems to sense when someone is coming after it with tweezers, a pin, whatever. When it's sitting in its little lesions doing its thing, and I'm talking collectively here, it, Morgellons, it's relatively stable. But when people begin to go after it, and this happens every time, people who pull a chunk of gooey mass with fibers in it out, they feel different. What is it like when you yank something out, Jan? What do you feel like?
Usually like a big relief. I mean, it's literally like pulling it's not your tissue. It's like you're pulling a parasite from you, if you can imagine having a leech on you.
Right.
Getting rid of it.
Right.
Except that the ones that have the tentacle type things, particularly when you pull on those, what they do is engorge those with your own body fluids, and it's never red like blood. It's just they are able to like filter the red cells out, apparently.
Take just the plasma.
Swell up under your skin and make it that much tougher to get them out.
Yeah, and they actually move away also. They'll pull back. They'll recede deeper into the epidermis and the flesh. All right, I think we're running into a break here in just a moment or two, but there's a physician in Australia who's been a friend of mine for probably 15 years now, Dr. Joseph Chapalone, MD, and he has begun to diagnose Morgellons in patients down there. And I'm going to talk about that in just a minute with Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith. It's a very fascinating email that Joseph sent to me today, and I'm sure he wouldn't mind me reading it, so I will do that and get the response of our two special guests and longtime friends in just a minute. Okay, and we're about to go into a letter here from Dr. Joseph Chapalone, MD of Australia, talking with Jan Smith and Cliff Mickelson, doing an update on Morgellons here. Dr. Chapalone wrote, he said, "Hello, Jeff, I have some news that may be relevant to Morgellons. Since I last spoke with you, I have diagnosed 6 more patients with skin manifestations of this disease. I suspect many others with cerebral symptoms. 2 of these cases deserve more comment. One lady had a large lesion on her upper thigh. I was clinically certain of the diagnosis, and I made an appointment for surgery, which I performed 1 week later, removing the complete lesion." He went in and took the whole thing. Interesting. "I advise the pathology laboratory to specifically look for Morgellons fibers when they did their work. They did not know what I was talking about. But the strange thing was this. When the patient presented for surgery, she said, You'd think that the lesion almost heard us talking, for it began closing up and is almost healed. Indeed it was, all but healed, in a matter of days, without any treatment whatsoever. It had been open and weeping for over 3 months before that. So Dr. Chapalone went ahead and removed what was left of it, sent it off to the pathology lab, told them to look for Morgellons fibers, said, what the hell are you talking about? They don't know what fibers are. So that's one. Any comment on that, Cliff?
Well, not knowing the particulars and stuff, I would say that it doesn't sound beyond the pale to me. I mean, I've heard other stories that are just as equally intriguing.
Totally right, Jan. And we've heard of what comes to mind, Dr. Roger Lear, his work in removing alien implants, which, come to think of it, are often covered with that same gristle-like encapsulation, Jan.
Right.
And he said,
I've actually heard from somebody, and of course it's hearsay again, but somebody told me that he had actually taken some implants from some Morgellons people that he considered alien implants. So, I don't know.
But he has taken many things out of many people. But my point is, back in the beginning, the things he was identifying as alien implants may have been manifestations of Morgellons. Maybe he didn't know.
Well, it's possible the Morgellons itself could be an alien implant.
Well, that's where I was going ultimately with this, but yes, indeed.
Yeah.
He said that on more than a few occasions, I've known Roger for a long time, that when he would begin to probe and go after the object that was a lump in someone's skin, for example, the object would seem to withdraw and hide.
Oh, right.
Which is what some Morgellons patients describe. Now, here's another one. This is again from Dr. Joseph Chapalone, who is finding Morgellons, apparently, more often than he probably would like to. The second case is of a man who was a truck driver. He excoriated himself severely because of the itching in his skin. He also incidentally had severe recurrent tinea cruris. His excoriations had become infected. He scratched himself so much he got superficial infections. I made an arrangement to biopsy some of the lesions a few days later after the skin infection was under control. In the meantime, I placed him on the usual dose of an antifungal called, Griseofulvin. G-R-I-S-E-O, Griseofulvin, F-U-L-V-I-N, for he had needed this 2 years earlier for the resistant recurrent tinea, and an antibiotic called clindamycin, C-L-I-N-D-A-M-Y-C-I-N, clindamycin, for the skin infection. Amazingly, all his lesions had disappeared in just a few days. Griseofulvin takes weeks to months to work against tinea. Hence, this was not just tinea he had. He had something else. The tinea cruris was better, but was still evident. But the lesions, which I had clinically diagnosed as Morgellons, had vanished. So, there you go.
Yeah. Wow.
More strangeness. But as we talked for years and years, Morgellon is Morgellons on all seven continents. All around the world, maybe, Cliff, how many millions? Tens, hundreds of millions? We don't know.
Easy tens of millions. I imagine if you had the time to do the research, you could document tens of millions.
And most of them wouldn't necessarily even have skin manifestations of this.
Well, absolutely not. In fact, the majority of them probably wouldn't. As Jan noted earlier, it does seem that only a certain class of people appear to react more negatively to this invasion than others. But this particular form is ubiquitous. It can be found everywhere, not only inside the body, but outside the body and in the environment. So it's everywhere.
Jan's paper is up in Featured Stories. I've been my DSL went down about 7 hours ago. I've been offline all that time, so I can't direct you exactly to it. But just scroll down Featured Stories, and look for Jan Smith, and you'll find her latest paper with lots of pictures and fascinating research in there. How many different common types of Morgellons things are there? If you had to do a taxonomy and say, all right, well, we've got 11 or 12 different commonly found issues, fibers, gristle, whatever, go on from there. How many would there be, Jan, that you would put in that basket?
Well, I mean, if I'm just looking at my own case, I've isolated at least 6 or 7 different kinds of fibers to begin with. Then we have the modal strands, which boil down to being polysaccharide strands, according to the fellow that took them to the SUNY labs and found that he could melt them with a laser light. And those are the ones that move. So, I mean, that's pretty creepy that a hunk of polysaccharide-type plastic, you know, has motion in it.
That's pretty suggestive of... And those are the clear-looking ones, right? White?
No, the polysaccharide, well, they are clear, but sometimes as the crystals fall off on the outside, they have a crystal layer on the outside, and as those crystals fall off, the more wormy-looking part of the strand is underneath. And I would really venture to say that there is some kind of an annelid worm type of the genetic in there, but it's not the prevalent one, but the outside layer is crystals, and they fall off. And, I mean, if you know anything about nanotechnology, you know that all of it's formed from crystals. So I don't know what that all represents, but I don't think it can be good.
No, it's not good. All right, be right back. Hang on, gang. All right. There seems to be a recurring effort by some new to the community and some old and been around for a while to lay this off as some kind of bug. Bugs in the body. You've got bugs in your skin. I've seen bugs. I've pulled bugs out of my skin. It's just bugs. That's all it is. Bugs. Jan, I know you have some pretty strong feelings about the bugs explanation.
I sure do. People have actually mailed me some of these so-called bugs, and they're not like anything that exists on this planet. One lady sent me something in the mail that it was this little tiny fly that was iridescent colored. It was white and iridescent. I thought about it like it looked like Tinkerbell. It was just surreal. It didn't look like any insect that could be known to man. And another lady sent me photos of a spider that was completely made out of gel. And another spider that had a bright blue body, which matched all the Morgellons fibers, that wasn't really a spider, but it had 8 legs, and it had a body. It didn't seem to have a head. By and large, those things aren't coming from nature. Those are coming out of a lab. And it might be an evil vector to put this stuff out.
A lab or?
Or
maybe they got off... It's kind of like stowaways on contaminants from spacecraft that landed here from elsewhere.
You know, I'd like to think it's that accidental. But honestly, I think that if this stuff is from elsewhere, then they know they're using it. I'd like to think that it was a mistake when the space shuttle flew in, but. Somehow I just am not buying that. As a matter of fact, I got a phone call from a lady last night from Texas, and she wanted to know where she could send this piece of material that she just found on her head that was a rectangle, and it had numbers on it.
regular numbers that we're familiar with?
Yeah, it was some kind of a coding, and she could see some kind of like little tiny actual, like that glyph other thing that I had. It had something actually imprinted on it. And
did you get this from her yet?
No, I just talked to her last night, she was just wanted to know where it was that she could send this, that somebody would identify this and tell her exactly what it was, and
I
had
to
say,
sends it to
there
you.
Isn't no such place right now.
Well, you're it. You that would be interesting to see pictures of, by all means.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I know it would, but I mean, as far as being actually able to tell her what it is and where it came from, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Can't do that, no.
No.
Sure.
And also, Jeff, I think if I could jump in real quick, I think that a lot of people are seeing what they would like to see there, and a lot of times these particular forms actually can assume shapes that actually look like something else. a lot of times people see things, they don't know what to identify it as. They just
kind of like a Rorschach reaction.
Yes, exactly. Well put. Very well put. But no, the bug thing, that's not happening. That's not what this is about.
Jan, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, I have an interesting email from a friend of mine, which I'd like to read. It's just a few sentences, but I think this addresses something. He actually has seen a doctor up here in New Hampshire who was willing to work with him, but she wasn't willing to send his lab work to anywhere in the United States. So subsequently, his lab work got sent to Canada. So this is what the lab person wrote back to the doctor. Hi, doctor. I have been studying the target microbe causing Jack's problems. That's a fictitious name. And there seems to be some inconsistencies with toxoplasma behavior, because at first she thought he had toxoplasmosis.
Uh-huh.
It is a parasite for sure, but the morphology does not quite fit into the toxo hypothesis. It does have an average size and consistency of anatomy, but it does not produce zoites. It does produce spore-like granules, and these are significant to its reproduction and defense.
Huh.
I wish I knew more about it, but sometimes these strange things cannot be identified without genetic analysis. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, for me, what he's saying there is, I don't know what the hell it is, and we need to take it down to the genetic level, because
right. This
is a guy that had worked in a lab for 30 years, and he's, you know, looking at something that he doesn't know what it is.
Right.
But to him, it looks like a hybrid of other things that he's seen, but nothing for sure.
Because of the sheer numbers of different types of things that you've identified and isolated, Jan.
Yeah.
How does that argue for laboratory work? I mean, I could see one or two, but we're talking about a lot more than one or two. Now, why would these people be screwing around with nanotechnology to the extent that within the human body of tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of people, there are maybe dozens of different kinds of things running around now? Are these self-replicating? Are they actually able to create new life forms within their own nano vector and nano paradigm? It's bizarre.
Well, I would say so. You know, one of the reasons that when I first had, I had sores on my arm to begin with for a really long time, and I felt fine and nothing happened. But if you put something in your body that's really tiny, it's going to take quite a while, if it's an actual device as opposed to germs,
right,
to replicate and be large enough to start causing a big effect. And I think that's true for a lot of people. They start off getting something, they don't pay any attention to it, and later on, a couple of years down the road, it might blow up. Then it goes away, and then it comes back. I mean, it's such an erratic system of what's making this act up and not. But I think that some of the things in there may be in cycles. So it must depend on what type of cycles they are. But my thought is, because of all of the varied kinds of things that there are, there's some kind of a synergistic system with all of these things. If they're putting a whole system into us and trying to, you know, transhumanize us in some way, it would be a complex system. And I have found the polyoptic type fibers that would be used in a thing like that. And I found the nano devices for communications, and we've discovered that people with more gallons put out signals on an oscilloscope. So there's something larger at hand.
And clearly they're able to receive signals as well.
I think that's true.
That's a logical conclusion. It's a conclusion nonetheless. I would have to put a challenge out to whomever may know someone who does autopsies on human beings to ask them privately, confidentially, if they're familiar with this issue and have seen things that they can't identify. If according to that earlier report you mentioned, I would challenge that friend to go to that source and follow that up to the best of his ability and find out exactly what was going on. Because if people are dying and the autopsy is revealing clumps of fibers at crucial vital organ interfaces in the body which are resulting in the deaths of people,
mm-hmm.
we need to know this. We have a birthright to know this. We can't just play games, I don't want to talk about it. There's a responsibility that goes way beyond that. We're talking about the potential enslavement of every man, woman, and child on this planet through this obviously ubiquitous syndrome. And if these people with this disease this disorder, this affliction, can send out or emit or have the fibers and other elements within the body emitting energy that can be read by an oscilloscope, my goodness, what the capabilities would be for receiving.
Well, obviously somebody's receiving or there wouldn't be a signal.
Well, for sure. So they're talking to each other. Or it's kind of like a hive mentality.
Well, you know, and that's exactly what this transhuman thing is about, is a hive mentality. And I agree with you. Even though we talked about the Dictyostelium, the slime mold, that you know, is a communal kind of a
right.
of an amoeba, it really does go far beyond that. And I mean, it does seem like they're linked into what our head is telling. You know, they're almost linked into our thoughts. They know, like the lady, they know that if she was thinking about, gee, we're gonna, you know, remove this great big triangular thing here.
Right.
You know, maybe in kind they said, well, let's get out of here.
Well, the same thing happened to Roger Lear. The people said that they felt, as soon as they had made a decision to have the surgical procedure, they felt different. And these objects, whatever they were, often would migrate to a different location. And Dr. Lear couldn't find them sometimes. Very difficult. And trying to pull them out was another issue entirely. So,
right.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I need to talk to Roger. You should talk to Roger, both of you, and compare notes, because there may be a real obvious crossover here. Maybe it's the same thing.
Yeah, I would like to do that.
Yeah,
I've written to him before, but unfortunately it's hard to get him to answer.
Well, put my name in the subject line.
Oh, okay.
Say, specifically referred to you, Dr. Lear, by Jeff Rentz. Very urgent. And he'll answer you. So, okay, we just have a minute left. Cliff, anything to say in summation here of our latest update?
Well, actually, Jeff, I just would like to say that I know that there are some foundations out there currently who have been recently endowed with small amounts of money. There are private foundations that are working on the Morgellons issue. And I would urge any and all of those members of those foundations to try and get some DNA work done on this stuff if possible. Find out for sure what's going on, why chemical stains won't bind with the RNA and DNA of this stuff, and go in that direction. And then I just urge the Morgellons community and all to keep the faith and to keep working together, and we will get through this.
All right. Jan?
I just agree with Cliff. I think that this community has to pull together as a whole and try not to be splintered into as many little factions as they are.
And boy, is it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how to get around that or get over it, especially when you have people who are fighting neuropsychological, emotional issues. It makes it tough, you know. 2 and 2 don't always equal 4.
No.
Absolutely.
So that's hard. That's very hard. Thank you guys very much. Cliff, thanks. Enjoy each day down there. I know you are. Take care.
Indeed, I will.
All right. Jan, thanks for your heroic citizen scientist endeavors, and keep the papers coming.
Thanks for supporting us, Jeff. Thanks.
Always. Okay, take care.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Bye. Look for Jan Smith's paper in the featured stories section of Rentz.com. And if you have strange things on your body, sores that won't heal, you need to do some work. You need to do some research. And it's all at Rentz.com and Jan Smith's website. And there are many more people, as that nurse from the state of Washington told us on the program a couple of years ago now. She said there are many more people that have this than you would ever believe. A lot of her staff co-workers had it, and they wore long sleeves all the time, even in warm weather. All right, we'll be back with more in just a few minutes.